You're listening to Science Friday from NPR News. I'm Ira Flatow. Last week at this time, a swine flu pandemic was being described as imminent, but with deaths remaining low, fortunately, the virus appears to be milder than feared. So what causes a flu virus to turn deadly, and how exactly does it kill people? Well, a new study investigates why seasonal influenza kills some people but only causes mild aches and shakes in others. And the researchers found that when people are very sick with flu, the pattern in the body is the same. The flu overwhelms the first line of defense, prompting the immune system to kick into overdrive. And it's this overreaction from the immune system that causes the whole system to break down, which makes people susceptible to common bacterial infections. And then the bacterial stuff is really what gets you. So how exactly does the flu break the immune system? Here to talk about it is Kate Sullivan, chief of the Division of Allergy and Immunology and a professor of pediatrics at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. She joins us from the Philly airport. Thanks for being with us today from Philly airport.
Thank you very much.
You're co-author of this flu study published in the Journal of Leukocyte Biology. And walk us through exactly what happens in the body when we're infected with the flu.
Well, for every flu virus, no matter what the strain, the pattern is actually pretty similar. So we inoculate our eyes or our nose by having touched someone or something that has the influenza. And the virus initially just affects the cells within our mucous membrane. So the first couple of days, the virus is simply spreading within our nose, within our throat, on our surfaces. And the immune system at that point is just being alerted to the fact that we are infected. And the initial defense against the virus is really sort of a wall. So we produce a substance called interferon, and that interferon actually interferes with viral replication, and that's how it got its name. And the job of the interferon is to sort of slow the process down, to buy a little bit of time for the rest of our immune system to kick in.
Mm-hmm. And then what happens?
Well, hopefully we recruit our T cells, and those are the cells that are actually going to eradicate the virus. So those T cells are the killers, and they actually get rid of the virus. Now, unfortunately, to do that, they have to kill the respiratory cells that are harboring the virus. And so when you're very sick with influenza, this is a little bit disgusting, but a lot of the goo that you cough up is actually dead cells from your throat, your lungs, and your nose. So it's a process that's very effective. Our T cells are quite good at eradicating the virus, but there's some healthy tissue that gets lost along the way, unfortunately.
And so what happens in people who react much more violently to it?
So there's a phenomenon that we sometimes call a cytokine storm, which is, I think, is a very evocative description. So a cytokine is kind of a hormone in the immune system, and that's the process where the cells alert each other that there's danger, that they need to get revved up, that they need to attack. And that cytokine is meant to be there for a purpose. It's part of the alert phase. But in people who have very severe influenza, be it a normal everyday influenza virus where someone just happens to have gotten very sick from it, or be it a very violent strain of influenza like the H5N1 avian influenza, for whatever the cause is, whichever virus it is that's causing it, the end result is the same. The people with the most severe clinical manifestations of influenza have a very overactive immune system, which I know seems paradoxical. If the immune system is doing such a great job, why are the people so sick? But in fact, it goes into overdrive, as you said, and it's that overdrive phase that really damages the body.
And where does the damage occur? Is it in the lungs? Is it in the blood vessels?
Predominantly in the lungs, although other organs can be affected with influenza. But it's our immune system is incredibly good at targeting our responses to a specific location. So if we have a sinus infection, we really just make an immune response to whatever it is that's infecting our sinuses. And so with influenza in this overdrive situation, the body is trying to fight it everywhere. And then that becomes problematic.
And so while it's fighting off the viruses, and you have all this gucky other liquid in you, as you were talking about, you're leaving yourself open to attack from another side. Like in a battle, your left flank is being attacked by the bacteria.
That's exactly right. One way to think of it is that your immune system is so distracted by killing the virus and working on it that it kind of leaves your left flank open.
And so it's the bacteria growing in all that warm fluid, so to speak, is what gets us.
So for not for every person with severe influenza, so it's very much virus dependent. So for a typical influenza year, so not speaking about swine flu or avian flu or anything exotic, just the everyday flu virus that we get each year, about a third of the people that get into serious trouble with the flu virus are really not sick from the virus at all. They're sick from bacteria. So it's not everyone with terrible influenza. But certainly a significant minority of people really aren't that sick from the virus. They're just sick because they've got a bacterial pneumonia.
And what causes their death? Is it that they can't fight off the bacteria?
So for the people, that's exactly right, for the people that die each year, so not the run-of-the-mill influenza, but the people who are very seriously ill, they really have perhaps three different kinds of problems. So in one case, the virus just overwhelms their system, and they truly die of the influenza virus. In about a third of the cases, it's really from a bacterial infection. And then in about a third of the cases, it's some other organ that's been attacked. So in some cases, the heart or the brain.
Mm-hmm. So that's why I guess we expect the flu to be gone and it's not and we're still feeling yucky, we go for that antibiotic treatment.
Yes, and we, of course, discourage the overuse of antibiotics because there's a lot of bacterial resistance brewing, not just in America, all around the world, but this bacterial resistance is an enormous problem. So we discourage the overuse of antibiotics, but certainly there are lots of times when it's very appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Is this the same thing? You were talking about the normal flu, but if we talk about the avian flu epidemic and the 1918 flu epidemic, is this the same thing that's going on in these big, deadly ones?
Indeed. So for the avian influenza, this cytokine storm is a very prominent feature. And in fact, the cytokine storm is so violent and so severe that most people don't survive to the point where they can get a bacterial infection. So the bacterial infections represent a smaller issue in that situation just because the virus itself is so deadly. But if you go all the way back to the 1918 pandemic, again, about a third of the people died of plain old vanilla bacteria, bacteria that typically would not be infecting them if they didn't have influenza.
And they didn't have wonder drugs like we have.
No, they didn't.
Yeah. And did you actually study tissue samples from those 1918 outbreaks?
We did not, but there's a group at NIH that has studied quite intensively the autopsy samples from people who died in 1918.
And it showed that they just were overwhelmed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the pattern actually looked, although more severe and more people were affected, the pattern's actually quite comparable to what we see with seasonal influenza.
You know, when I was a kid, we used to have chicken pox parties.
Yes.
Right. Remember those?
Yes, I do.
So if you had your kids had chicken pox or you had it, you wanted to infect those people so they would never get chicken pox again. I have been hearing now that there have been swine flu parties. Is that right? Have you heard about those?
I have not heard that. There aren't so many cases in the U.S., so I'd be surprised if there were enough for that to happen.
Uh-huh. Why do we have different outcomes for older people and babies that die of the flu than we have for other kinds of age groups?
For the swine flu or just for the regular seasonal influenza?
Just the regular seasonal one.
Well, I think in both cases, the immune systems are not very strong. So babies are still maturing their immune system. Older people, the immune system starts to wane a little bit. I think babies also have the complication that their airways are just not very big, so they can't tolerate much inflammation.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, I guess then in older people, they just can't. Their immune system is not that good at fighting off anything.
It's true. It's sad, but our immune system starts to wane after about the age of 18.
Yeah. Oh, is that right? That early?
Yes.
So we're left with nothing by the time.
I wouldn't say nothing. We're built pretty well. But it is true that the immune system starts to deteriorate slightly and slowly, I like to say, after the age of 18.
Huh. So what kind of research is left to do? If I gave you the blank check question, you know, if you had a blank check to research something about flu and any kind of flu, where would you like to do? Where would you put that money?
I think it's not actually my field, but I think one of the most important subjects is to develop a better strategy for predicting which strains will come down the pike the following year. Because, as you know, it takes about 6 months to make a vaccine. And really, a vaccine is all we have right now in terms of preventing influenza. And that six-month time frame is a real handicap.
Yeah.
So it would be better if we could predict with greater accuracy which vaccines were coming down the pike. Certainly no one saw the swine flu coming.
And we're still growing them in eggs.
Yes.
I mean, that's 100 years old or more technique.
It's perhaps 60 years old. But yes, it's very antiquated and very unsatisfying.
If I told you, you know, at the 1939 World's Fair when we were making flu vaccine that we'd still be doing that 60 years later, you'd say, well, we might have, you know, flying robots by then, but certainly we'll have a better way of making a flu vaccine.
It does seem completely crazy. I agree.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much, Dr. Sullivan, for taking time to talk with us. Where do you go in your research now? What would you like to be working on?
We're very interested in protecting the immunologically vulnerable. I'm a pediatric immunologist mm-hmm. by training, and so I do worry about the people whose immune systems are weakened. I worry about not only how they will be able to handle the flu themselves, but also they represent a potential reservoir for spreading influenza. So I'm very interested in finding better ways to protect them.
Are kids the germ magnets we think they are?
Oh, yes. But they're so darn cute, aren't they?
And they're germ magnets because why? Are they exposed to so many more viruses or because they don't have the immunity that we do as adults from being exposed?
I think their immune systems are a little bit immature, so it does take them longer to clear viruses. But at our age, we have antibodies to almost everything that we have had in our lives. So mm-hmm. that rhinovirus that we had when we were 5 years old, we probably still have antibodies, and we won't catch it again. So we have the accumulated protection from all of our years of exposure, and the kids just don't have that.
Yeah, and especially since there are hundreds of these, right?
Yes.
Yeah, you just go one through the other.
Yep.
Till you get them. Okay, thank you very much, Dr. Sullivan, for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you. Take care.
You're welcome. Have a good weekend.
Bye-bye.
Kate Sullivan is the chief of the Division of Allergy and Immunology and professor of pediatrics. That's at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. We're going to take a short break and change gears and come back and talk about The Hobbit, the very interesting set of bones that have been on display last week or so. Which really adds a lot of evidence to the fact that this was a whole separate species. So we'll come back and talk a lot about it, and stay with us, give you a chance to interview the scientists. We'll be right back after this break. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from NPR News.